A lot of people think of your core as your abs, which is a hilariously simplified and, I mean, frankly, short-sighted version of the core. The core is such an appropriate name because it's a central and an essential part of our physicality. We need to think of our core as being 360 degrees, not just your abdominal wall. I know lots of people who spend all this time developing their leg strength or their pressing ability, and strong limbs and a weak core, it's like shooting a cannon from a canoe. And today I'm going to be outlining a model for functional core training. Hey, it's Ben Wise, and this is The Fitness Movement. The Fitness Movement is brought to you by Zor Fitness. Zor Fitness is my company and my platform to deliver training-related content to people just like you. The site features in-depth articles, movement breakdowns, and our online training program, The Protocol. And I offer one-on-one remote coaching for fitness athletes. So I hope you check it out. Head over to zorfitness.com. That's Z-O-A-R fitness.com. See you there. And welcome back to my rant on training the core. Okay, so today I'm going to be answering three different questions. Firstly, what is the core and sort of why does it matter? And two, roles that the core is going to be performing or actions that it performs. And then lastly is training the core. So improving the actions in a way that actually carries over to a better performance. It all comes back to performing better, which is what's the thing that I care about. And I think the thing that a lot of the listeners care about is actually performing well. Okay, so let's get into it. What is the core and why does it matter? The core is all the musculature really that manipulates the axial skeleton. So the appendicular skeleton would be your appendages, so like your arms and your legs. So if you chopped off your arms and your legs, what's left would be your core. So it's really everything except your appendages. Okay, so let's talk about the roles of the core. So we can breathe with the core. We can brace with the core, so actually hold your breath and occlude your breathing, rotation or anti-rotation, or basically preventing rotation. We can flex and extend, so thinking like rounding your spine versus arching your spine. We can laterally flex or extend, so basically thinking bending the side. With all these different ways that we can move with our spine and with the core. So let's go through each one of these ones and pull it apart a little bit. The first classification that I would say would be that breathing and bracing. So I've talked before about the role of interabdominal pressure and being able to occlude your breathing and hold your breath. I talked about that in episode 17. That's a very important skill in the sport of fitness because you're going to lift a super heavy load sometimes when you're tired and already fatigued and already breathing hard. So are you able to create a lot of pressure and get stiff and have trunk rigidity as you need it? But also, we have to realize that that same musculature that's responsible for creating a very stiff core and have good core strength is also responsible for exchanging gas, right? So your inspiratory and expiratory muscles that are going to be pulling air into your rib cage and inflating your lungs and then pressing it out, creating these high and low pressure gradients, that's what's allowing you to exchange gas and actually be able to breathe. Like that's what's going on. We don't have to think about it consciously most of the time. However, that's what's going on. So we have this conflicting role of our respiratory muscles where we have to be able to exchange gas, but we also have to be able to create a brace and be able to potentially generate movement using that exact same musculature. So for example, we exhale using our abs. We also might do something like a toes to bar and use our abs to make this really simplified. So that's the exact same musculature. If you're trying to exhale while you're also folding, which is exactly what you do in a toes to bar, if you're doing like a 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio where you're exhaling as you're folding and compressing, that's what you typically do in a toes to bar. That is demanding so much more of your core because that musculature is being used to compress your core and also exhale air. We could say the same thing for different actions in your inspiratory muscles as well. For example, if you have a bar on the front rack and you're trying to inhale, obviously if you have literal weight on your rib cage, it's going to be much harder to raise your clavicles and create as much space in that cage and the rib cage as you possibly can. So I wrote a pretty detailed article on that. It was called The Dual Role of Respiratory Musculature. I will link to that in the show notes as well as episode 17 on holding your breath. So if you're curious more about that, zorfitness.com/podcast/027. Next is rotation and anti-rotation. So if I give two examples of what I would consider to be functional movements, something like swinging a hammer would be a rotational force, right? And that actually got tested at the games. So it actually could be performance-based as well if we're looking at it that way. Something that would be anti-rotation based could be sprinting on the assault bike or literally just sprinting on the ground. Both of those require really high rotation and anti-rotation forces. So you're generating all of your movement from your core. And even though it really only looks like you're moving the limbs, unless you're really stable and can generate a lot of force, but it's not a lot of movement, but it's a ton of force in your core, you won't actually be able to express high joint velocities and actually be able to move with high degrees of speed in those settings. Also, if we broke this down, it could be something as simple as a crossbody chop with a band or a polyf press where you're maintaining a core position and pressing away from you, but your core is stationary. So those are just examples of accessory work that we could be using for rotation or anti-rotation. Third would be flexion and extension. So oftentimes these get referred to in gymnastics work as hollow and arch. So we have these two global positions, global meaning your entire body, where we go into a hollow position and then we go into an arch position. So we're basically extending and flexing our spine and we're just making sure that our limbs are a part of that system. And so often the core prevents flexion or prevents extension, right? If we're doing a deadlift, we're preventing ourselves from flexing. If we're pushing off the ground in a burpee, we are preventing ourselves from extending. However, there's also times where we actually go into an act of flexion or extension because it's needed for a given movement. And again, the gymnastics is the most prevalent example of that. But things like sandbags over the shoulder, where you're going into really hard, basically a hyperextension, be able to do that efficiently. Things like pistols, you have to be able to flex your spine in that position, especially if you're someone who has relatively long legs. Like there's just no other way to do it. It's not bad. It is. It's movement. And then lastly would be lateral flexion and extension. And this is something that doesn't get talked near as much about. But if you're carrying something unilaterally, so on one side of your body, so say you're just carrying a kettlebell in one hand, like a suitcase carry, you're getting pulled to one side. So you have to be able to resist getting pulled to one side and be able to maintain posture. And that's another thing the core does. It's really important for posture, and postural muscles are something that we are using literally all the time. Unless you're laying down, you have to use your postural muscles. Taking the time to develop the postural muscles is something that is highly underrated, in my opinion. And weighted carries are really my favorite way to train the midline. And when I say midline, I really think of midline as an element or a subcategory of the core. Okay, so that's really the roles that the core does. Now let's go into training the core. And this is where the bulk of our information is, the things that I really want to talk about live here. So basically, how can we improve the actions that I just talked about in a way that carries over to a better performance? And I think I could probably talk about this almost endlessly if I don't necessarily know what things a person is preparing for. Like if I just go through examples, it's going to be endless. So I'm going to assume them having a person who wants to compete in an event or at least complete an event like the CrossFit Open or an online qualifier of some type. So I think there's really two guiding questions that we need to be asking ourselves, like what qualities do they need or do you need in this case? And then how do we develop those qualities? So this is the coaching process that I go through as I onboard an athlete, or one of the things that I go through in onboarding. So assessing the athlete for their movement. So we're looking at this athlete and we're looking at their axial skeleton organization, which is a really fancy way of saying, like, can they get in a good position, which is probably the most important thing for their success in order to be strong and or in order to be efficient. And I'm talking about those on two different ends of the spectrum. Like if you can move well and get in good positions, you can express high levels of strength and you can also express high levels of good quality movement that leads to efficiency and leads to endurance and longevity of movement. So this is really the lowest hanging fruit for most athletes out there. So the first thing that I'm going to have this athlete do is go through a movement screen. So for my athletes, when I have them go through a 20-point assessment where I'm having them go through all these different positions and seeing, can they hit these positions unloaded? So I'm not having them tired. I'm not having them moving fast or heavy. I just want to see, when you are unfatigued and you're warm, are you able to actually get in a decent position, or are you not able to actually do that? So if I'm having an athlete squat and I'm always seeing that they're in an anterior pelvic tilt and their ribs are always flaring out and they're always in this hyperextended position, then I know that if they are in a situation where they're breathing really hard and it's a heavy load, that they're not going to be able to maintain a decent position because they weren't even able to do it when it's unloaded. So if I have always have an athlete where maybe they go overhead with a barbell and they get into a thoracic extension and they can't breathe effectively, then we really know that that position is going to never get better unless we do specific work to address that. And that can be mobility work, that can be midline work, that can take a lot of different forms. But the first thing is, can you actually get into a position when you're unfatigued, unloaded positions? So if they're able to do that, so yes, they're able to do that, then watch them in a performance scenario. So workouts that might push them and their limiters, or what I would call like aggravating their limiter. If they're not able to do that, then the question is, why can't they get into that position? Is it A, because they just don't have the range of motion or the joint freedom to be able to get there? Or is it two, that they have the range of motion, but they can't actively claim it? So that's the difference between passive range of motion and active range of motion, which is a really big indicator for injury. If someone has the ability to be able to get into a bunch of different positions, but they can't actually control the range, that is a recipe to get injured. C, they don't know what the optimal position is. They default to getting tension from the wrong place. So it is a matter of being unconsciously incompetent, right? They're not even aware that they're unable to do the thing correctly. So let's just say that this person, they're actually able to hit a decent position. Otherwise, it's pretty straightforward. Like, you have to address their mobility and get them to be in the right positions. But let's take them to a performance scenario. So say this person was able to organize in the right positions when they were unloaded, when they were unfatigued. Okay, we're going to put them in a performance scenario. And this is another thing that I'll do for my athletes, is that I'm going to tailor a specific, usually it's just a Metcon in this case, or maybe it's possibly interval work or strength work if that's something that they need. But for the most part, it might just be resembling the sport, but something that's going to aggravate their limiter or put them at some sort of an extreme. So there's really three extremes that I would want to help aggravate their limiter. So again, I'm trying to get them to get to the point where I'm seeing in video review, which I would do with them, that something's breaking down. And this is because of the three extremes: speed, load, or fatigue. So they're either moving really quickly and that's causing a breakdown in their position. For example, if you're cycling air squats really quickly at maximum speed, maybe now you're unable to maintain a good pelvic position. Maybe you go into an anterior pelvic tilt because that's your default and you can't prevent that when you're moving so fast. But maybe if you were doing really slow, controlled reps, you're able to do it. Load. So this one is a matter of intensity relative to someone's one rep max. So say someone's able to maintain good spinal extension and T-spine extension when they're in a loaded front squat at, you know, 60% of their max, at 80% of their max, but when they go to 95% of their max, they round and they go into spinal flexion, they're not able to maintain their midline in that position. Okay, that was one of the extremes that they failed at. Or it could be fatigue, and fatigue is one of those things that frankly can be very complicated because there's lots of things that interplay in it. Is it local fatigue? Is it CO2 buildup? Is it a lack of oxygen in the muscle? Is it that person is unable to breathe in a certain position and that's preventing it, or they're just, maybe their quote engine isn't good enough? There could be a bunch of different things, but basically when they get tired, things get sloppy. So oftentimes I'll call that like sloppy tired. When someone gets sloppy tired, things break down and they're just not able to maintain their technique and positions and midline, and the core isn't able to work effectively. So based on what I would see from the performance scenarios and from the movement screen, I would address that through four different ways mainly. The first one just being working on mobility. And this is mobility work the way that people often think of mobility work traditionally. I really like how Christopher Summers says it. Spending time, like you're just there in the position, you're forcing yourself to get better at that position over time. It takes time. You have to spend time in that position to get that position better. And it takes a long time to actually claim new range. It's one thing if you're just, let's call it getting your nervous system out of the way where you're able to claim the range that you already have. It's not particularly special or new. That's what people do all the time in warmups. However, to actually create structural change in a muscle or in a joint, it takes a long time to do that. And this type of mobility work is really if someone has short muscles. Their muscles lack the length that's needed. Whereas two is if we're going to be working on something like end range isometrics, that's really something for the person who has the range of motion, but they aren't able to control the range of motion. So there's a big discrepancy between their active and passive range of motion. What we can do to reduce that gap is things like isometrics at end range. So things like pause reps. So if you're doing a back squat and you're pausing at the bottom of each rep, you're going to develop more strength at that end range. We can do things with tempo where we're controlling every single range of motion of that joint. And we can do things like holds. So maybe it's a handstand hold focusing on an open shoulder. And then maybe we could even combine that with a stretch if someone is dealing with both of those limiters. Three is if this person doesn't actually know what the optimal positions are. So the athlete who really just doesn't understand what the position should look like. And they might even be able to organize into that position once you explain it to them. But the biggest thing is being able to educate that athlete. So I remember when I was first getting taught how to squat, I was in middle school and our coach told us to think of your pelvis as a bowl of water and you're going to spill the bowl of water out, telling us to go into anterior pelvic tilt as we're squatting, which probably a lot of you know is not a great position to squat from. Like you can't activate your glutes very much at all when you're in an anterior pelvic tilt. So it's a really poor position to put your lower back into. And I actually had some lower back issues later on because of that. But the solution for me was just being educated. Like I needed to understand what the ideal position was. So as a coach, you need to figure out ways that you can educate your athletes and teach them the correct movement. So for me, this is the website. Like I link out to different YouTube videos. I link out to articles or movement pages, and I have them able to actually be able to learn based on those resources and based on video review and our conversations. So that's a really big part of coaching that I think a lot of people skip over is actually having that athlete learn what the optimal position is. And then four, really practically, is just limiting the number of extremes that you're giving to one at a time, right? So for example, maybe you give that person speed, but then they're not fatigued or they're not super heavy, or you give them fatiguing work, but it's not super fast or super heavy, or you give them really heavy loaded work, but it's not fatiguing and it's not super fast. So examples of each one of these, if we're doing tempo work and pauses for strength work. So for example, in our movement page on the split jerk, we give the triple pause split jerk where you're pausing in each position, you're reinforcing the right balance of the foot and the right position of the front rack and be able to sustain positions. However, that might be heavy, but it's certainly not tired and it's not very fast in terms of maximal speed. It's more of a strength speed activity. We could give something like broken intervals where we're moving a heavy load relatively quickly, but we're stopping as fatigue gets too high, so we're actually able to maintain form. So practically, this could be as simple as some sort of a Metcon AMRAP for 15 minutes. We're going to give them 30 double unders, 14 bar facing burpees, and 8 box jump overs. So that'd be a really grueling AMRAP if you just did it like that. But I want them to stop and rest for 1 minute whenever you feel like you're getting, quote, sloppy tired. So we're just limiting the amount that they're actually getting tired so that they're able to maintain a decent position, and we're preventing all these compensation patterns from getting too bad and really making sure that we're just training the right systems at the right time of year. And lastly, it would be something like plyometrics or sprint training where the speed and joint velocities are going to be super high, but the load is going to be relatively low and the fatigue is going to be very low. Taking each of those extremes and very slowly introducing them as the athlete can actually handle them and as their movement doesn't break down based on the review that you're doing with them and that you can actually see that it's moving in the direction that you want to, then you continue to progress them. So for me, after I've taken an athlete through their assessment process and I've gotten all of the sport specific training that I want to see, and I've also gotten all the movement screening stuff done, then I'm going to create a plan to help them overcome these limiters. And I've already introduced a lot of this stuff, but there's three additional focal points that I would include into this plan that I really haven't covered yet. And I think they don't necessarily neatly fit into the rest of the points I already mentioned, but I think it's just a new way of thinking about it and it can be super helpful. So it's breath work, mobility work, and midline work. And for each of these, we can really think about moving it from a relatively simple movement into a more complex movement, and moving it from something that's a little bit more isolated into a more integrated environment. If that's confusing at all, I mean, I'll give you really simple examples. If we take breath work, again, this is important because we're actually maintaining your breathing coordination and potentially strength of that breath, and you can maintain good movement and core engagement as you're doing that. So oftentimes, if people aren't able to maintain their breathing effectively, that's what really brings on the whole sloppy tired thing, is that you get scattered in your breathing and then you tend to lose core engagement and just sort of go wherever. It's the whole shooting a cannon from a canoe idea. Yeah, and that's the whole reason for breath work being in here. So my point being, if we take something that's an isolation versus integration, so something that would be isolated for breath work might be supine breathing. So lying on your back, breathing. Not too complicated. You might probably do it in bed at night. 5 minutes at a 4-0-6-0 cadence. So in other words, a 4 second inhale, no pause in the inhale, 6 second exhale, and then no pause on the exhale. And you're continuing to do that for 5 minutes. It should be very relaxing. However, you're focusing on your breathing. So there's a lot of benefits just from doing that, both in terms of just overall arousal level, in terms of just the awareness of your breath. These are all things that are super important for an athlete, any athlete, to be really good at. And those simple breathing cadences are something that I often give my athletes, usually at least twice per week. However, if we move into something that's a little bit more integrated, it could be something like run 2 miles as fast as possible. So a 2 mile time trial, but you have to maintain a 1-to-3 breath to step ratio as you're doing that. So a 3-step inhale and a 3-step exhale, and your pace is dictated by your ability to maintain that breath cadence. So next is mobility work. And this is really just about the freedom to be able to allow people to get into a better position. So if we talk about something that's isolated, we could talk about positional breathing. So let's get into the bottom of your overhead squat and hold it. This is something that's done in the overhead squat mobility program quite a bit. You're just spending time. You have to be able to get in the position, the exact position that you need, and just spend time there. It's not super heavy. It's not super fatiguing. You just have to get there and hold it. If we talked about something that's a little bit more integrated, it could be our aerobic accessory days that we do on the recovery days in the protocol, and then I give a lot of my athletes, where it's maybe a 30-minute clock and you're going through easy erg work, isometrics for mobility. It could be things like goblet squat holds, good morning holds, handstand holds with that open shoulder, things like that, where you're incorporating and tying in different systems, but you're doing it in a way that is non-stressful and that improves your quality of movement over the long term and improves your nervous system tone. Other things that I talked about in episode 18. So if you want more on that, go back to 18, check that out. And then lastly, it would be the midline work. Something that would be more isolated would be examples of accessory work such as the powerlift press. Again, anti-rotation, if we're talking about a cross-body band chop, which we're actually working the rotation then, things like overhead planks, where we're tying in the lats into the core, working on these hollow positions, things that can be transferred into more what people would call functional movements. But really the way I think about functional is something that's actually going to transfer to the things that you need and want to do on a daily basis. So, and it certainly improves your ability to be able to perform in the sport of fitness. So if that's something that you're doing on a daily basis, then it works. So if you move on to something that's a little bit more integrated, it could be something along the lines of handstand walks, which is more of a midline exercise than it is a pressing exercise, in my opinion. Other examples would be things like overhead squats or toes to bar and interval work or Metcons. Really anything that demands the core. So this could be as simple as 12 skier cows into 9 toes to bar, rest 60 seconds times 6 sets. really simple ways that you can just start working the core and working the breathing and your positions as you're doing it. And really, there's virtually endless ways that you can train the core, because basically everything that you do involves the core. There's really no movement that you can do outside of the weight room that has all these machines that can isolate you. If we're talking about general functional movement, basically everything that you do involves the core. So don't let yourself get caught up in making the perfect program. Just pick a few key items from today that stood out to you and that you can actually act on, and create your own model for functional core training. Hey, it's Ben again, and I wanted to take a minute to talk about our online training program, The Protocol. The Protocol is for athletes who want to train for the sport of fitness. It's programmed by me, and it's my best attempt at preparing athletes with varying strengths and weaknesses for the demands of the sport. And I do this through the use of silos, which basically means I segment parts of the program based upon athletes' ability in a particular area. So for example, an element of the program this fall on Tuesdays and Thursdays was gymnastics-focused training. And there are four different silos, so athletes could choose to work on chest bars or muscle-ups or handstand push-ups or handstand walks. In other words, we are all doing the same core program, but there are ways to individualize it on a weekly basis. And as part of the program, I also include coaches' notes, technique videos, and educational resources almost daily. My goal is to not just have this feel like you're doing a workout plan, but to feel like I'm actually coaching you through the process of becoming the best athlete you can be. And having access to the protocol is just part of the benefit of being a pro member. You also get instant access to the vault, which is exactly like it sounds. It means that you unlock the ability to be able to download all the programs that I've ever written. So this includes things like Bulletproof Body, which is the accessory work for functional fitness, Gymnastics Density for the Big Five, Functional Thickness, Your First Muscle Up, Cyclical Supremacy, Overhead Squat Mobility, Breathwork for the Sport of Fitness, and it could go on and on. And lastly, you get instant access to pro articles, which are on topics that I really want to safeguard from the public and keep for my athletes. Stuff like cycle speeds for CrossFit open movements, strength ratio data analysis, so basically determining your relative weaknesses on strength work, breaking down sanctionals programming or games programming, energy systems testing and analysis, and a whole lot more. And if this sounds like stuff that you're into, you can get a 7-day free trial of Pro. Simply head over to zorfitness.com/pro. Thanks for listening, and as always, stay the course.